Yes, thank you very much, Jaime. Yes, we just, I'm required to put this on all my talks now that the foundation of Klaus Jacobs, person who used to run Jacobs Coffee, gave the university 200 million euro. We change our name and have to put this on there. I'm very delighted. Apparently, the university was in trouble. So I'm going to talk about the idea of operator sampling. And when I made up this talk, I mean, there's the technical stuff, which somehow makes it difficult to keep the audience alive or awake. So I did two movie tricks. The first one is I'm going to give a teaser up front, and then I'm going to pull the back to the front of the talk. So first of all, the teaser. So let me recall what is sampling theory, the classical sampling theory. There you are given some function. So f is normally a function mapping, for example, the real line to the complex plane. And the question is, the goal is recover f, all of f, all the values at real numbers from just a discrete set of sampled values. Okay, can we do this? Well, yes, we can do this. If f is in a Pali-Wiener space, omega, which is the set of all functions f with the property, all L2 functions with the property that the Fourier transform of f is supported in some interval from minus omega over 2 to omega over 2. If we have that this holds, then we can write f. For example, we can recover f from its samples via the formula, and I hope that I get it right. We need to have a factor of t out here, and then we have sine pi over t x minus nt over pi x minus nt. We can recover the function in that form, and further, you can read this off fairly easily. We have that the norm, the L2 norm of f, corresponds to the little L2 norm of the sample. So I forgot one very big ingredient here. For this to work, we need one condition, namely, f is not allowed to change too quickly. So f needs to be. So this omega, which tells us the fastest frequency, the quickest changes, cannot be too large. The big condition here is that t times omega must be less or equal 1. Okay? This is the classical sampling theory. So now I'm going to start talking about what operator sampling is. So operator sampling theory. Okay, what do we have here? Here, our objects are operators. For example, I use operators mapping temperature distributions into L2. And we are trying to somehow recover operators from samples. What I mean with this is the goal is to recover H from H applied to something, and if I talk about sampling, I'm going to apply this to a sum over deltas at NT. I'm going to apply this operator to this temperature distribution, trying to get H from this. And the question now is, if I look at this format, well, do we have some results where H must be in some set? Do we have a reconstruction formula? of the operator. So I'm going to try to reconstruct the operator from such an output. And do I have such a formula? Well, what kind of formula do I want? I want a formula, for example, which relates some norm on the operator H. For example, it could be that this is also an Hilbert-Schmidt operator. So I could measure, for example, the operator H in the Hilbert-Schmidt norm, and I would want this to correspond to this should correspond to the L2 norm of the output. Then I can recover. Well, if I have a reconstruction formula, I know how to recover. But certainly the big question is, well, do we have some T times omega condition as here? Do we have that here? Okay, so this was the teaser. Now I start with the end of the talk. First of all, this is in technical terms, this Shannon's sampling theorem. Here I'm just writing M. And why do I write here M as for the function? Well, because this up here can already be phrased, and we will obtain this result as a special case of this result. How can we see this? Well, I can consider this set of samples as the product of F times the sum over those delta and T. If I multiply a function, continuous functions, with the sum of deltas, I'm going to get exactly as high those values of F of NT. And in that case here, we will see that we will look at this as a multiplier, a multiplication operator. Okay, so this is our goal. This is the standard theorem which everybody probably knows. So let's go back and start with a summary of the talk. What I will have done is I will have introduced and shown you what we mean with operator sampling. Also the term operator identification will be discussed. We'll show that Shannon sampling theorem is an operator identification result. And we will show that our result, the operator classes which we can deal with, are not just Hilbert-Schmidt operators which extend to a sufficiently large space, but that we can consider any linear differential operator or any pseudo-differential operator with the condition. Again, we need some kind of condition like some kind of Pahlevina condition. The Pahlevina condition will concern the Kuhn-Nuremberg symbol of the operator. So the point will be that the Kuhn-Nuremberg symbol of the operator needs to be, the Fourier transform needs to be contained in some small set. Similar as with the functions here, where the Fourier transform of the function has to be contained in some small set. And now essentially the last slide of the talk is this, where which already tells you what the result will be. Shannon sampling theorem corresponds to the identification of multipliers. Multipliers are operators which have a so-called spreading support. So their spreading function lives on the new axis. The spreading function of an operator lives in time frequency. The spreading function is actually the Fourier transform of the Kuhn-Nuremberg symbol. We'll go in detail on that later. And what our operator sampling theorem will deal with, it will deal with any operator, not just multiplication operators, whose spreading support, again, the spreading function might be a distribution or the function, but whose distributional spreading support is contained in rectangles in time frequency plane, where we must have, in order to be able to identify, we must have that T times omega is less or equal 1. So this is not the condition here on the sampling rate that comes with it as well, but this is a condition already on the object which we want to identify. Here, there was only the omega condition on F and T denoted the sampling rate. And in this case, we also talk about what we are doing. We are widening Shannon sampling theorem. Shannon sampling theorem lives on a line. We widen it to operators which live in that set. Okay, but let's go to the principle of operator identification. It's motivated, and that's how I got into the field, through communications engineering. A colleague of mine, engineer Werner Kotzek, introduced me to this to an open problem which concerned operator identification. And the problem is essentially if you want to transmit information through a channel, but you don't know how the channel looks like. You have some idea how it looks like, but you don't really know all the properties. So what you want to send a test signal through the channel and look at the output and say, aha, this is the channel, aha, now I know how to invert the channel. I think this was also discussed, you mentioned that was mentioned in Charlie's talk. The problem is if you want to invert an operator, you need to know the operator. And that's all what this is about, channel or operator identification, how to find out now about an operator. So we have a set of operators, and our goal is to pick some particular G, very smart element up here in the domain space, only one space, so that if I see just the output of that element, I can tell you which operator we have. Okay, so I will fix always one G, and I have the quantifier for all operators. And I want that this mapping, which is induced here, that this mapping here is boundedly invertible, that it's continuous and bounded, and what I call stable, that is boundedly invertible. This is the general problem. Can you find such a G so that a set of operators, a certain subset of linear operators, is one-to-one and is stable and is a nice map? Now, in the particular case where G is the sum of weighted deltas, then we refer to this to operator sampling, else operator identification. Some results will concern operator identification and some operator sampling. Okay, now I found this always difficult to keep track of the quantifier, so I have some simple examples to see what this means. And here we are just discussing now operators which map 3-space to 3-space. We have subsets of those, so subsets of matrices. And the idea is, can I find an element up here which for a particular space gives me a, in this case, all I need is an injective map from Z into the range space. For example, if I take the whole wealth of matrices, if I take Z to be C3 cross, if I take any matrix, can I find an identifier in the domain which gives me an injective map from the matrices to down here? No, exactly, because why can I not find this? Because the dimension, I'm inducing a linear map, the dimension of that space is 9, the dimension of this space is 3, I cannot go injectively down. So let's cut down the dimension of our operator space. Let's just consider matrices of this form. So we have only 3 degrees of freedom. Can I identify this set of matrices? Yes? Actually, no, I can't. I only saw this. No, I can't, because actually all those matrices map into a linear space of dimension 1. I mean, the range of all those matrices, I mean, this maps to the space of vectors which are linear combinations of these three, which is a one-dimensional space. I still have the dimension problem still there. So not only degrees of freedom matter, but structure matters. But now I can correct this. I can consider this set of operators, this set of matrices. And yes, here we can choose as an identifier 100. And the idea is, I know I only have values in the matrix in the first column. If I apply it to this, I get out the first column. That tells me which operator we have. Okay, so this is supposed to give you a little bit the idea the things which we are talking about. Okay, now the technical stuff starts, but we have talked about it previously in the conference, so I hope it will not be too bad. Fourier transform, this is just an indication how I am normalizing this. I have the other important operator, this is the translation operator, which shifts the function, the modulation operator, which multiplies the function with an exponential. That is just a frequency shift, as you can see here. And then, as we've also seen before, the short-time Fourier transform is how do I get the light? Laser. Okay. So the short-time Fourier transform is given by this expression. And here you can see that if G is well localized in time, for example, G is a Gaussian, then G hat is also a Gaussian. G hat is well localized around zero in frequency. Then you see you're shifting to calculate such a value. You're shifting the function G to be around T. You cut out of F only a portion of G. You cut out of F whatever happens around T. And on the frequency side, you cut out here, because you're shifting by nu, you cut out of the function F hat only the part of G hat which lives around nu. So that means that to have here a large value, we must have that the frequencies around nu are present in F at around time T. So this is just interpretation of the short-time Fourier transform. Further, if you take the Gaussian G here, then you see that this function decays in T as F decays in T. G decays optimally, exponentially. So this inner product decays as F decays. This inner product, with the same argument, if G is the Gaussian, decays as F hat decays. So to look at the short-time Fourier transform with respect to the Gaussian somehow tells you how the function decays with respect to time, in time and in frequency. The other part of an interpretation is simply the short-time Fourier transform, which shows with the inversion formula, which tells you you can build F from time and frequency shifted versions of G with coefficients given by the short-time Fourier transform. Okay, this is now we have to fix this basis which we will be dealing with. First, recall again LP of R, these are the functions which are where F to the power of P is integrable. Again, if P is large, then F only needs to decay mildly, because the mild decay is going to be strengthened through the P. If P is large, if P is small, then we actually require quite some decay of F. So the LP norm differently punishes decay of a function. Now, if you have a function in two variables, then you can punish the decay in the different direction differently. You can punish the decay in the x direction with exponent p, and in the q direction with, in the y direction with an exponent q. These are the mixed norm spaces, the LPQ norm spaces, which you can certainly define if you have functions on R2. Now, what are modulation spaces? These are again now first modulation space of functions in one variable. They have a p and q going with it, because to compute that norm, I take the short-time Fourier transform with respect to the Gaussian. That gives me a function in two variables. And now I'm punishing both variables differently. So I'm punishing here the two variables. One variable represents the decay in time, the other one in frequency. And I'm punishing time decay and frequency decay differently. Okay, these are the modulation spaces. And this is the nice flexibility of working with modulation spaces, that you can measure the decay in time separately in a different way than the decay in frequency. And we will use this flexibility. But we will use it on a little bit on elements which live on in two variables. So if you have two variables, you take the short-time Fourier transform here. with respect to okay, the tensor product, or well, whatever here, the two-dimensional Gaussian. If you do this, then I mean you can now fix four values. So you have x and y, you have corresponding c and mu or something, and each of those you can punish the decay differently. So this is actually what we will be using, and that's the technical stuff which I want to tell you that we have to get through. Note what's very important for the theory of modulation spaces. If you change the LP norm here with the infinity norm, you get the M infinity infinity spaces. And those spaces are not just spaces of functions, but in fact of temperate distributions. Not all temperate distributions, but the delta and sequences of deltas are in there, so which is important for my approach here. So this is a good space. It's large enough for sampling theory. Okay, now I'm going to things which you guys know better than me, operator representations. So we have an operator H. Normally we just say, well, H is applied to some function, gives me another function, and I evaluate this at X. Many operators you can use to a, you can write them using a kernel, and then you just write the operator in this form. All right, this is the output in the kernel notation. You can also use the Kohn-Nierenberg symbol to express the operators which we will be dealing with. And you can use a simple change of variable from the kernel to get the so-called time-varying impulse response. Again, this is not always, you cannot always write this as an integral, but you can always make some sense of it weakly. But I will not go into technical, into that much technical detail. And then, which is very important for us, is the spreading function, eta h. The spreading function, in some sense, this f of x, I'm not integrating with respect to x here, so I could actually pull out the function f. And then you see that the spreading function tells me how I'm decomposing my big operator h as a linear combination or a superposition of time frequency shift operators. So this tells us how I'm putting a function in. It's the channel output is assembled by time frequency shifted versions of the input signal. Probably it's best to think for you, or might be satisfactory to just think of the spreading function as a Fourier transform, well, actually as a symplectic Fourier transform, but it's not much more than a Fourier transform of the Kohn-Nierenberg symbol. And the theory which we have here is a theory of operators with compactly supported Fourier transform, with band-limited Kohn-Nierenberg symbols. That we are talking about operators with band-limited Kohn-Nierenberg symbols. That means that the spreading functions are compactly supported. And the spreading functions were supported on those sets which you saw on the first slide. Okay, so another important formula which I want to write up here is that you can obtain the kernel from the spreading function. You can compute from the spreading function the kernel in this way, but I don't want to go too much into detail. And now the big thing is here the definition of operators which we will be dealing with. And this is the correct operators which we will be writing, which I can write in here. We define an operator Pahlavina space. It's important. We need some flexibility. We need to bring in a P and a Q. And I'm also bringing up a weighting factor with the S. Well, these are just those operators H where the spreading function is in the modulation space. In fact, what I'm taking the Fourier transform with respect to a Gaussian, short-term Fourier transform with respect to a Gaussian of the Kohn-Nierenberg symbol. Then I throw a weight in Xi onto it, and I require that this element is an LPQ11. The 1-1 I can replace with anything else because, in fact, I'm going to consider only those operators H which with band-limited Kuhn-Nuremberg symbol. I'm only looking at those which are where the Kuhn-Nuremberg symbol is contained, the Fourier transform contained in some compact ZS. This tells me that the transfer variables of the Kuhn-Nuremberg symbol, X and Xc, in these two variables, I have optimal decay, and there's no reason to punish any decay. So let me write this. So we have this operator, Pauli-Wiener space, PQ. P and Q measures the decay of the Kuhn-Nuremberg symbol of the operators. And we have here little s and here capital S. S is a set in R cross R hat. And this is the set of all operators H with the property that sigma H, that the short time Fourier transform with respect to a Gaussian of sigma H, where I write out now the variables because I'm going to multiply it with something, nu comma t, this times 1 plus, how did I write it, c squared to the power of s over 2. This is supposed to be in LPQ11. I have four variables. Here I want LP decay, LQ decay, and here I don't care about the decay because I also have that I'm looking at only operators where the Kuhn-Nuremberg symbol is band limited to some ZS. Okay, this is the space which I need to put into the operator sampling theory. This is not helping me. So now, let's skip to the next page. So now here again, what I said before. If you take a small s here, then the operator class, which I consider, includes linear differential operators, where I'm choosing bounded coefficient functions, and I need to have that the bounded coefficient functions are band limited. It includes any pseudo-differential operators of any order n, as long as I do have a band limitation on the Kuhn-Nuremberg symbol. It includes finite delay convolution operators and multiplication operators with band limited symbols. So this is exactly what comes out again. I want this to be included in order to be able to say that I'm generalizing function, the sampling theory for functions. Okay, I'm going to skip to a couple of slides here. No, not necessarily. Let's get back to this later, but I don't think I need C infinity coefficient. Okay, so let me go now real quick and motivate. Considering, so these pictures always will show you the support of some spreading functions or a band limitation. I'm drawing the set of the band limitation of a Kuhn-Nuremberg symbol. And now I'm looking at the mobile, I'm trying to motivate that it makes sense to talk about compact sets in here, to talk about operators which have band-limited Kuhn-Nuremberg symbols. So if you talk about a mobile communication channel, any channel you can write out certainly with some some kernel here. Now you can write and rewrite in this form, where actually this is the so-called time-varying impulse response, this function little h. And but a mobile communication channel has a particular property, namely this time-varying impulse response changes very slowly with time. This is almost a convolution operator. If there would be no x appearing here, this would be a convolution operator. In mobile communications, you send information with the speed of light while you yourself travel with a fast train or something. That means that compared to the transmission speed, the channel changes very slowly. So this is almost always the same function. But there is some dependence on time, else you would have time varying or wired, but there's some change of time. But it's small. How can I quantify this? Well, I can say that if I take this function here, I say this changes slowly in x, that means there are no fast frequencies in there. So I can have a Paley-Wiener condition on this, saying, well, I want this function, I want to have that this Fourier transform of this function is compactly supported in U. I don't have large nu's in there. I don't have large frequencies in there. Well, what is this function? Well, this function is exactly the spreading function where I'm trying to justify compact support of. So for compact support in U simply means that this my channel changes slowly. Compact support with respect to T means that I have not that I have finite delay. The signal dies out pretty quickly. So I'm not going to receive, if I send a message now out with my telephone, there's nothing going to be received after a second or after a year or whatever. So this is denoted by saying that, well, for large t's, this function is 0, 2. So, which is the same thing, for large t, this function is 0. So it makes sense to quantify the limited time and frequency spread by saying, well, I want that the support of the spreading function is contained in some limited set. That's where also the motivation comes from. That's where the problem came from, to identify slowly varying environments. And it would be interesting to see whether somebody breathing under a machine or something is also slowly time varying. So we have here a justification to require that the spreading function, and therefore the Fourier transform of the Kohn-Nierenberg symbol, lives in some small set, for example, in a rectangular set. Well, and this is exactly then the kind of things which we will be considering. So this is the motivation of considering these kind of operators. And let's look again at Shannon sampling theorem. It's the same thing as you saw before, but without the correction here. Made a mistake there. And now all that technical nonsense, the important thing is, if you start with an operator Paley-Wiener space with the property that omega t prime is less than 1, then you can plug in the delta with t, where you still have to have omega t is less than 1, but you can also plug in here to the t prime. Then you can plug in this sum of deltas, which I also denote by this symbol, and the output fully determines h. So, and we do have a construction formula. We have the norm, the corresponding norms, and we have a reconstruction formula here. Well, what do we reconstruct? Well, what does it mean to reconstruct the operator? Well, I'm reconstructing the kernel or the Kohn-Nierenberg symbol. Here I'm reconstructing the time-varying impulse response. So I'm getting this formula out. And you again see how closely this formula represents the formula of Shannon sampling theory. So, and this is really a generalization, the blue theorem of the black theorem. And to show this, and this is an important part, advertising these modulation spaces and their usability. Because here I really need to know, use now modulation spaces to get the Shannon's theorem from our general theorem. Again, so I'm trying to prove this theorem from our operator sampling theorem. First of all, to connect them, I'm going to just say, okay, I'm talking about multiplication operators. I'm going to talk about multiplication operators now to apply the operator sampling theorem to a function. I first need to connect them, right? So I take my function and I say I'm talking about the multiplication operator with this. Now, if I look at the operator, well, I can simply find the Kohn-Nierenberg symbol. The Kohn-Nierenberg symbol is here, is constant in Xi and behaves in XSM. If I look at the spreading function therefore behaves in the new direction as M hat. M hat was compactly supported because M was in the Kohn-Nierenberg, M was in the Palevina space of omega. So this function is compactly supported. But I'm acting in the t direction as a distribution. This is the spreading function of a multiplication operator. So this means that if I draw the spreading, the support of the spreading function, so we have the new, the t and the new axis, so the spreading function lives here on the t new plane, and I draw the support, where the support will be from omega over 2 to minus omega over 2 of the spreading function will just look and live on here because it's just delta of t times m hat of nu. So now my operator is in the one direction here, in the direction up and down, it's an L2 because it's a Fourier transform of L2. In this direction, it's an L2. In this direction here, in the other direction, it's not an L2. It's a distribution. But it's an M infinity. So the operator, the multiplication operator, is in the operator Palevina space 2 infinity. And I must choose 2 infinity here. And now I'm applying this formula, this actually, here inherit is a double sum, which reduces to a single sum. We have that the time-varying impulse response actually is just this expression is the function, and we get the corresponding norm equalities out here. Note we get by our operator sampling theorem that this corresponds to the modulation space norm with 2, 2 here. But that's nothing else than the L2 norm of M. And again, you get here also the L2 norm now of the sequence. I don't know what I want to say. My point is just that here we are really dealing in applications with elements which are functions in one direction and distributions in the other direction. And therefore, we need to push in here this PQ. In the Palevina theorem, you normally just say I'm having an L2 function. But here we need to play with different values. Okay, let's go to trying to understand this, what's going on. Because what I just showed you, and which I like a lot, this direction of the theory, that things are possible, is not very difficult. After you have the right ideas, the right notation, it's not that difficult. The difficult stuff we come to a little bit later. But the non-difficult stuff is also not that hard to understand. Let's look at the operator H. Which lives in here, and I'm having here the 1, 1. That means we have a beautiful, nice function here for the spreading function. Spreading function is a nice function which lives here on this set. So you check the size of the set. We have here, this is 4 fifths times 1 is 4 fifths. So this has area of 4 fifths. So we are supposed to be able to identify it or to sample it. And in fact, I can sample it. If I could look at the kernel now, how do I get the kernel? Well, first of all, I need I have like a 90 degree skewing of this, and then I take Fourier transforms, and I get like, this is how the kernel looks like of this operator. But the kernel is, but in the values on those diagonals of the kernel, are band-limited functions, band-limited to an interval of size 4 fifths. Okay? This is just what this one formula was supposed to tell you. Just believe it for me now. Now I'm plugging into this operator. Well, as for example, I want to say this function here. If you just look at this function on that line, that's band-limited to an interval of size 4 fifths. So what I'm doing now is I'm plugging in, and that's one more thing which I should write out. What happens if you apply H to a sum of deltas n? What happens here? Well, to evaluate the output of x. This is the integral of kappa h of x comma y, and then you have a sum over the delta n t of y dy. And what is this? Well, this is just, let me bring out the sum, and now you're integrating this function in y against the delta, and what you get is kappa h of x comma n t. Okay, so the output are just slices of the kernel. Now I'm taking this example and... Okay, I'm running a little bit late. So the output, if I send in the deltas of distance 1, means I'm chopping off those lines out of the kernel and I'm summing it up. So this is the output. And it's easy to see the function f02 is band limited. So I only need sample values. I only need sample values of this function to recover the whole function and therefore the whole kernel if I do it for all the lines. I need the sample values, for example, with distance 5 over 4 is sufficient. Here I'm sending in actually the delta train with distance 5 over 4. I'm getting these pieces here nicely separated, and I can read off the green values which I need for... I can read off the green values which I need for this function here very simply from that. From these values, I can recover this line. If I go a little bit to the left, I can recover all the lines. Okay, this is the simple mechanism which is going on. Which tells us this identification result. Okay, this is now, and I'm not going to go over this. I have 4 more minutes, I believe. This is the difficult part, which says if t times omega is bigger than 1, well, if this is identifiable, then t times omega must be less or equal 1. That means if t times omega is larger than 1, then I cannot identify. It's not only I cannot sample, that means I cannot do it with a delta train, but there exists no distribution in the world which can recover the whole signal from one output. This is really, this was the most difficult part, and it has been extended since then, and I'm not talking about the proof of this, but let's go over to the next step. So this was for rectangles, right? But what happens if we have, for example, if I know that my Kohn-Nuremberg symbol is band-limited to a ball, and if you look at this ball, this does not fit into any rectangle of area less than 1. But the ball has area less than 1. So can we do this? Can we say something about this? Same over here. Other geometry. And the result is, well, the same kind of theorem holds. What we need is a Jordan domain. This set needs to be Jordan domain, but that's not too bad to ask for. And then again, yes, we can identify the operator if the band limitation is to a set of measure less than 1. If the measure is bigger than 1, we cannot do it. So this is not operator sampling, this is operator identification. Still, for the positive direction, that's constructive. We are actually defining an identifier. And the identifier is, again, a weighted sum of deltas. So meaning the positive result is, again, done with operator sampling. We can sample those operators. But we can't... and it's easy to show, I never had to do it, but I think it's easy to show that this cannot be sampled is not difficult to show. What's difficult to show that it's not identifiable, that operator sampling does not limit you here. Okay, this is now the proof of this and the points which this is. I'm going over this. So there's an extension to MIMO channels. I just want to close now with this slide. So the current status, but the last part of the portion is not is being written up currently. It's not published yet. Is that we get the general result, which means to get the necessity for identification depending on the set S, that we have this for any set S, which is a Jordan domain, and we have the result for 1 less or equal P and Q less or equal infinity, and for any S in R as well. So we have really, we cover all those operators, and any operator, for example, this set here is drawn to have area less than 1. We can apply this to any such operators, and out of our theory results concerning multiplication operators, that is the classical sampling theorem, but also of convolution operators, because convolution operators, we know how to identify them, right? You just send in a delta, what you get out is the impulse response, which tells you what the operator is. Also, this other well-known fact is also a corollary to our theory, where we actually have only here compactly supported impulse responses, which we can cover. But both cases, which you know, are facts which we can get from our operator sampling theory, and that our operator sampling theory applies to a much wider class of operators. And again, let me just make one more remark. I said it, I think, already 10 times. Well, how do you see again here on the picture? I mean, that our result applies to this. However long you have your band limitation of the function in the in Shannon sampling theorem, however long this piece is, let it go from minus 1 million to plus 1 million. You can always find the box around it, which has area less than 1, and therefore, which makes our theorem applicable to this function. And I mean, as we saw, the formulas just reduce, our general formulas reduce to this particular formula. So, my time is up, I think. I just want to say one more thing. And that is, so the history is, this came up from communications engineering. We've been working on it now for a couple of years. I'm looking for applications, and I'm looking especially also to discuss it with some pseudo-differential operator people who can tell me a little bit more whether this can be used in that theory or something. I mean, I think it's a fairly canonical result, and I would like, I mean, I'm really here to discuss it with some people.